You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to our show on this beautiful day here on the 24th of August. And we have a day where a lot of school children are going back to school, a lot of teachers, first day back on the job. And for some of them, it looks like summer is starting to wind down. But the weather is nice. It's cooperating here in Chicago. But don't despair. We have a long way to go. Summer has not ended yet. On that note, let's talk a little bit about some public policy issues that are facing our community and our church and our society. Recently, I don't think many of you out there listening could avoid one of the topics that we're going to be talking about today, the topic we're going to talk about today, which is healthcare reform. What is going on in Congress with regard to trying to reform our nation's healthcare laws? And this morning, we are fortunate to be joined by two guests who are going to help us frame this issue and frame the debate a little bit about what's going on in Washington. Some of the questions that we're going to be talking about this morning is, what should the role of government be with regard to reforming our nation's healthcare system? What can we do to help contain the costs of health insurance, which, as we all know, is going up all the time, and at some point in time it will probably be unaffordable to many employers? Another question we'd like to talk about a little bit is about affordability and who gets covered. There is allegations out there that as many as 47 million Americans go without health care coverage, and I know that number has been criticized a little bit for perhaps being a little inflated. And also many other questions that we want to talk about this morning as we try to talk about what's going on in Washington and really what's going on across our communities as it relates to some of these town hall meetings that we've been having. And we want your opinion, and we want you to weigh in on your opinion about what's going on with the healthcare reform debate from a Catholic perspective. We're going to be talking about here this morning. And we're fortunate to be joined by two guests, like I said, to help us frame the issue a little bit. The first guest that I'll introduce to you is Patrick Cascione. He is the executive director of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, and Patrick should be on the line with us now. Patrick, welcome.
Good morning, Bob, and thank you for having me.
Great. It's good to hear your voice, and thanks for joining us as well. And also with us to provide another point of view on the topic is an organization that I've become more familiar with recently. It is the Illinois Policy Institute, and on the line with us is Christina Rasmussen. Christina, welcome. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Christina, maybe we could start, and Patrick, you both, maybe just describe a little bit about your organizations and what you do. Christina, why don't you go first?
Well, I work for the Illinois Policy Institute, and the Illinois Policy Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, state-based think tank. We focus primarily on economic policy. I'm based down here in the state capital of Springfield, and we have offices in Chicago as well. So we're concerned about the federal health care reform legislation as it would impact Illinois residents, the state budget, and state consumers.
That's a big task.
It is a very big task.
Exactly. It's a huge task if you just focused on Illinois alone. And Patrick, to you, the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association.
Yes, we refer to it as ICHA, and we represent their interests. So what we bring to this debate is both the perspective of the providers, those that are providing health care in Illinois, and also the recipients. Many of our Catholic charity clients are of lower socioeconomic demographics, so we bring their interests to this debate as well.
Patrick Cascione of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association and Christina Rasmussen of the Illinois Policy Institute here talking a little bit about healthcare reform and the healthcare reform debate. Christina, what does the Illinois Policy Institute, what do you see as some of the challenges in the debate that you've heard about so far? I mean, I know one of the parts that we're all struggling with here is there is a piece of legislation, H.R. 3200, that has been passed in some committees in the House, and after that, we kind of have a blank slate. It seems like we have a bunch of ideas going on. We have the president making the case for reforming the health care program in our country. But outside of that, it seems like we have a bunch of concepts flying around right now. Where is IPI, and what is your focus on the debate?
Well, you're absolutely right that health care reform is a moving target right now. Three committees in the House of Representatives were looking at health care bills, as were a few committees over on the Senate side. Many ideas have been put out there. They're floating around. There is not one single health care bill that all these ideas have coalesced into. Some ideas that we're seeing move forward, the elimination of health savings accounts, higher taxes to help pay for all of this. Most Americans, if you ask them, you look at the polls, they say yes, they want health care reform. Mm-hmm. But because of some of the concerns with the ideas that we see moving in Washington, they're not convinced that this is the right plan. And in fact, when you ask them about the associated costs and potential rationing that would go along with the Democrats' plan, support for the idea drops precipitously.
Yeah, it does. And I know, Patrick, it's interesting comparing this debate now in the year, whatever we're in, 2009, with what happened the last time there was a significant effort going on in Congress was when President Clinton was elected and his wife Hillary took the obligation to try to reform the nation's health care system, and some considerable time, energy, and effort went into the 92 plan, but that didn't seem to have much legs in terms of its ability to pass. Is there anything to be learned from our past experiences?
Well, I mean, that's one thing that President Obama tried to do is learn from that experience. They thought the mistake that President Clinton made at that point was coming up with a plan, a very detailed plan, and then presenting it to Congress. President Obama tried to do the opposite, come up with some very broad guidelines, and then leave it to Congress to come up with the detailed plan. But regardless of how you cut it, as Christina just indicated, you talk about health care reform and everyone's for it. You get into the details, whether it's the president proposing it as Clinton did, mm-hmm. or as now Congress is doing, and that's when it gets really difficult. And from our perspective, as again you and Christina had mentioned, there's a lot of different committees out there. There's no one bill that's come out of the House or the Senate. We're kind of grasping at straws here. So from the Catholic Health perspective, we've come at it to say, look, these are our principles, and at the end of the day, when you come up with a bill, we'll apply our principles to whatever that bill is, and then we'll know whether we're for it or against it. But, you know, basically our principles are we do want people to have access to health care. We do believe that it's a right that people have access to quality health care. But we also want to make sure that we protect life from conception through natural death. And, you know, as well as the conscience clause, many of our Catholic providers do not want to be put in a position where we are dictated to that we have to do something that's against our moral theology. So at this point, we're dealing with broad strokes. We're saying this is what we want, but until you come up with details, we're not going to be taking a position one way or the other.
We're talking with Patrick Cascione of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association and Christina Rasmussen of the Illinois Policy Institute. We're talking about healthcare reform, and as Patrick just outlined, we're talking about some of those issues. How can we access a healthcare system? What is the right of should people have a right to healthcare? Should we be protecting our healthcare right of conscience? Christina talked about the public option, government healthcare plans, the expansion of Medicare and Medicaid. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm with the Catholic Conference of Illinois. If you want to weigh in on our conversation, the number is 255-8408. That's area code 312-255-8408. We'll be right back after this brief message.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
As we celebrate the Year for Priests, look for stories about how we honor our priests, in the Pope's words, with gratitude for their work and witness of their life.
Visit our website at www.catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Better than ever, subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection." There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
When was the last time you spoke with your neighbors? How are they holding up in these current hard economic times? People in your neighborhood, even the person living right next door, might be struggling. It could be a few late mortgage payments, a food shortage, or even problems with substance abuse or domestic violence. At Catholic Charities, your neighbors are in our care. We work to feed, clothe, counsel, and shelter anyone in need. Consider donating to our Neighbors in Need Fund. Visit us at CatholicCharities.net or call 312-655-7525.
Welcome back to our program, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about healthcare and healthcare reform, and we have two experts on the phone with us. One is Christina Rasmussen of the Illinois Policy Institute, and the other is Patrick Cashion of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association. The number, if you want to weigh in our conversation or join the conversation, is area code 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. Patrick and Christina, we were talking at the intro just some of the major issues, some of the overview of the topics. But I guess I want to get into some of maybe the specifics of the bill or the proposal or the concepts that we're reacting to at this point in time. And I guess Christina, this is for you as well as Patrick. We hear a lot about the president has said that if you have health care, that you shouldn't be concerned about losing your health care. Nothing in the bill will prevent you from continuing on as your current situation exists. Yet also there's a lot of talk about a public option and a government option, and there's a lot of fear out there about the government plan or the government option. Is the IPI have a, the Illinois Policy Institute, do you have a position at all about the public option portion of this proposal?
Let me quick address what you just said about the president promising that if you have health care that you like, you'll be able to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
This is patently false. It's false for me, and I'll tell you why. I have a health savings account. This is a high deductible mm-hmm. health insurance plan that's paired with a tax advantage savings account. Mm-hmm. I love this plan because it allows me to save money for future health care costs, and because that money goes into an account with my name on it, I have an incentive to spend intelligently, be careful with my medical dollars and so forth. But the bill that's under consideration would make these plans illegal because they don't like the idea of people having high deductible health plans. They want everyone to have very low deductibles. Maybe some people want low deductibles, but I want that high deductible so I can get that tax-advantaged savings account connected with it. So I would lose my plan underneath this system. And there are 8 million Americans right now that have health savings accounts. This number is growing, and all of these individuals would lose access to their account because the plan wouldn't be considered acceptable under the guidelines underneath the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that as just a false claim because I know I wouldn't be able to keep my plan. But moving on to the aspect
option.
Of the public mm-hmm. plan, what's going to happen is that more and more people will see themselves lose their employer-provided care because it will be cheaper for their employer to pay a fine as opposed to continuing to offer health care benefits. So they could see many of their employers drop their plans. The Lewin Group, which is a healthcare research organization, was commissioned by the Heritage Foundation to look at what kind of numbers are we talking about here. And they found that 48% of privately insured Americans would transition out of private insurance, most of those to the public plan. 56% of Americans with employer-based coverage would lose their current insurance. And so the idea that they can create this massive public plan without employers dropping their costs is really just unrealistic.
So you think the penalty would be less than actually providing the care?
In many cases, it will be. Let's say you are an employer and you spend 15% of your payroll or your costs on health care coverage for your employees, and let's say the penalty is only 8%. Well, all of a sudden, you can pay that 8% of payroll instead of offering coverage with 15% of your payroll, and you've just saved yourself half a 7 to 8% in your costs. So many employers will opt to play the fine, drop their coverage for their employees, and then you really don't have a choice. Then you've got to go into that public plan, and it may not be as flexible as you like. What will be offered and considered acceptable coverage underneath these plans are going to be determined by a board of bureaucrats instead of consumers choosing what they want. And what we'll see is this board of bureaucrats deciding what kind of care gets covered. They will be subject to lobbying pressures. They may say that they'll be immune from pressure, but they won't be. So groups will go in and they'll try to get more coverage for their particular disease, or whether that be breast cancer or Parkinson's, and we'll could see some other care levels dropped because you're going to have to ration. You can't give everybody everything they want. So we may see some less popular diseases like head injury, coverage for that dropped in favor of politically popular causes like breast cancer.
And Patrick, what Christine is saying about the government option and who gets covered and what benefits are covered, any concerns from the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association about that?
Well, Bob, as I was listening to Christina, and Christine, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but I think it's to the point of what the problem is here. You're speculating that this is going to do that and it's going to create this and have these ramifications, and that may be true, but again, absent any detailed plan, when I hear the term public option, I don't even know what that means. I mean, in one sense I do, but as far as like specifically what are they saying, it's not there. There's no there. And I think that's what you're seeing in these town hall meetings, is that people are unclear on what it is. They think it's going to do something, and it may. I'm not saying Christina's wrong. I'm just saying it could or it could not. And there's just a lot of confusion out there.
There is,
and people are interpreting it the way they want to. Either they're for it or they're against it. And I think people have a sense of, and I think I do too, that this is much too important to be just ramming it down the throat of the American people, to say it had to be done before August, that it has to be done now in September. To me, that says politics. That says we have to get this done before next election year. Well, I don't think that's how we should do healthcare policy in this country. I think it's very complicated. And but I think what Christina articulated is what people are feeling out there.
Yeah. I also hear a lot about the public option, about whether it's in, whether it's out. Just this morning driving in, one radio station was talking about the comments that Nancy Pelosi had made with regard to the need to have the public option in whatever plan is passed. And yet Steny Hoyer, who's the majority leader in the House, saying, well, there could be a little bit of flexibility about public options and that sort of thing. So I think it is a bit of a moving target, and it is creating a lot of fear. We have to take a quick break. We want to continue the conversation about the health care reform debate. And Christina, if you want to respond to that, we will when we get back. The number is 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you? You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Time now for a Catholic Festival of Faith news update.
Families will be in the forefront at this fall's Catholic Festival of Faith with several activities designed to help parents and children celebrate their Catholic faith together. The festival is scheduled for Friday and Saturday, October 16th and 17th at the Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. Get more information and register at www.catholicfest.org.
Stay tuned to Relevant Radio for more Catholic Festival of Faith news updates.
This is Bob Gilligan. Welcome back to our program. We're talking about healthcare reform and the healthcare reform debate with Patrick Cascione of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Institute, Illinois Healthcare Association, and Christina Rasmussen of the Illinois Policy Institute. The number, if you wish to call in and participate in the conversation here, is 312-255-8408. Christina, I don't know if you want to respond at all to what Patrick was saying in terms of there is a lot of speculation out there about what's in and what's out. There's no doubt about that.
Well, there's two aspects to this.
Sure.
One, what is a government public health care plan? And then two, what is out there? What should we be looking at? A public plan, I want folks to think of it this way. This would be a nationwide government-offered public health care program modeled after Medicare. Government would set prices, often mandate providers to offer care, and you would have the government paying quite a bit of the health care costs. Of course, there are significant costs associated with this, and that's why we're seeing a $1 trillion-plus cost estimate attached to this. So that's kind of what a public option is. It's really a government option. They would mandate certain coverage and certain providers to take part. But let me talk about what's actually out there. We do have a bill. It's a pretty long bill, hundreds of pages. And I have to note that the National Taxpayers Union went in and looked at Obama's rhetoric compared to the actual bill words. And they found that in recent speeches, President Obama used positive words like choice and freedom and benefit and rights 45 times, and he only used negative words like prohibit and taxes 8 times. But then they went and looked at the actual bill, what the words said, and in H.R. 3200, positive words were only used 500 times. These are words like benefits, competitions, private, choice, freedom. But negative words were used 3 times as many. Negative words were used 1,500 times. These are words like taxes, prohibit, limit, penalty, enforcement, must, required. So we hear a lot of talk out there saying that this is going to offer choice and freedom and competition, but when you actually look at the bill text, they're talking about restrictions, regulations, enforcement, negative words. So there's really a difference between the rhetoric and the reality.
Is there a better way to look at this? I know we've talked a little bit about the government program and the allegation that it would cover certain things and not cover certain things and those sort of issues. But in terms of when we talk about health care reform, and I think Patrick's opening statement was that, I mean, we have to recognize that there are people out there who are working who are unable to have health care coverage because their employment does not provide it to them. And it's a significant issue. It's been a significant issue for years. And I think both of you have recognized that the costs of health care are increasing, and there's no doubt about that. And I think there is, most people perceive that, yes, something has to be done. And I think, Christina, you had mentioned that the public opinion polls all indicate, yeah, we need to reform it. But it seems like the options on the table have been somewhat limited. Are there other things that we could be looking at that we're not looking at right now? And maybe when Congress gets back, we could have a further conversation about other ideas to reform the healthcare system. I know there was an editorial in the newspaper, for example, over the weekend. I think Charles Lipson had editorialized about and asked the question, why is it that we can purchase auto insurance? I can go to somebody in New York or Wisconsin and purchase auto insurance in another state, yet with healthcare, that there's 50 different rule sets of rules and regulations. Each state has a separate set of rules and regulations on healthcare. I mean, are there other things we could be doing outside of what we're looking at?
Bob, if either I could just interject here.
Sure.
There was Senator Lieberman from Connecticut was on the talk shows yesterday, and there were articles in today's paper, and his suggestion is, because of the complications that we've talked about already, he's saying when we get back in September, let's go back to the basics. Let's look at what the real problems are, and maybe not reform this whole healthcare system that we have, because A, he talked about cost, but he said, what are the real problems? You have people that are the major cause of bankruptcy is people have health problems and their insurance runs out and then they run into high cost. They have pre-existing conditions where they can't get coverage. You have small businesses that can't provide coverage to their employees, therefore they go without insurance. He said, you know, those are real problems, and maybe we could refocus the debate and tackle those things rather than look at this whole overhaul of the whole system. And maybe that, I think that's where Congress may go when we get back. I think you're finding, just on this public plan, apparently the House with Nancy Pelosi, that's their line in the sand. They want that public plan. The senators, they're saying they're not going to go with a public plan. They might go with this co-op option, which no one quite understands how that would play out. So I think you may find that they're at an impasse, and they may just go back to what are the problems we can deal with right now? How can we get people who are really sick and chronic conditions, those who are in small businesses, those who are poor, how do we get them better health care now?
The United States Congress actually defining a problem and trying to solve it. That's what you're suggesting. It's pretty radical. Christina, any comment? I know there's probably a lot of things you want to say. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we have to be very careful, and they are trying to push this through now. There are some individuals, perhaps Senator Lieber is one of them, who really do want to look at the problems and craft carefully tailored public policy solutions to those problems. And then there are individuals who want to score a political win.
Yeah.
This president isn't doing so hot right now. His numbers are down in the polls. His boosters see that they need some sort of big policy win to get his supporters energized again, whether that be cap and tax or health care reform. They want to do something now, and that's why the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Reid, has said that we are going to pass this by any legislative means possible. And now they're talking about dividing up the bill, passing the controversial items under an arcane process called reconciliation, which only requires 51 votes in the Senate instead of 60, and then passing the less controversial aspects with the 60-vote requirement. So they're intent on passing something, no matter what, just to show the political momentum. And come the midterm elections next fall, here we've delivered a victory for you. I think that's an awful idea. This is something that you should not rush at all. I mean, President Reagan once said that the closest thing to eternal life is a government program, and once this program is in place, changing it or getting rid of it will be very difficult. So we need to get this right, and I would say that the path we're on right now is not the right option. Let me, if I may, go into what this might mean for Illinois and our state budget right now. Our state budget is broke. We had $11.6 billion budget deficit this past year. It's still really not solved. There isn't enough money to pay for the things that we're already currently committed to. Well, one of the ways that the House and Senate plans would help extend medical coverage to more people, about 11 million people, is through an expansion of the state Medicaid system. I mentioned earlier that this is a joint state and federal program to help cover the poor, the disabled, and families with children. Well, they would expand Medicaid to everyone making under 133% of the federal poverty level. There's some debate whether right now whether the federal government should pay for this, if the state government should pay for this, but we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars to pay for this expansion of Medicaid. And if any of that burden is put on the state, our budget is just going to blow up even worse than it already has. And so that's something that state legislators are very concerned about. And ultimately, as a taxpayer, does it really matter to me if the federal government pays for it versus the state government pays for it? No, I pay state and federal taxes. If there's no money in the kitty, this country is broke. So before we start going about entering into new expensive government programs, we might want to look at what we're already committed to and trying to get those things in order before we make the mess even bigger.
Yeah, the state's financial situation is real. I mean, it is dire, and I think you bring up a good point. Is we're already relying on the federal government to print more money so we can pay our bills here in Illinois, and if something further is passed that creates more spending obligations, the impact that will have on the state budget is obviously going to create even more problems than we have today. We have to have a quick break here. It is 9:30 a.m. here in Chicago. We're having a good conversation on healthcare reform, and we want to hear your opinion at area code 312-255-8408. That's area code 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
You're invited to attend an evangelization workshop, Learning to Labor in the Vineyard, sponsored by Bishop Joseph Perry's office and the Office for Black Catholics on Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School at 7740 Southwestern Avenue. This promises to be a wonderful workshop for everyone who serves in church ministries, for all who want to share the good news. The facilitator is Deacon Alex Jones of the Archdiocese of Detroit. The day-long evangelization experience is free. You can register through your church community or contact the Office for Black Catholics at 312-534-8376. We hope to see you Saturday, September 19th at St. Rita High School. Call 312-534-8376 and become part of Learning to Labor in the Vineyard.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan talking to Christina Rasmussen of the Illinois Policy Institute and Patrick Cascione from the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association. Talking about the break, about healthcare reform and what to do about it and some different ideas. The number is 312-255-8408. Christina, before the break, we were talking about ways to reform it. IPI, do you guys are you advocating any specific changes? What would IPI recommend in terms of tackling the healthcare reform issue?
We think the way to extend better quality healthcare coverage to more people is through individual choice. I don't trust the government to offer my family a consumer patient-centric healthcare system. I know that if the choice is in my hands, just like you were talking about earlier with buying auto insurance, can choose a better option for what's right for my family. So I would love to be able to see Illinois residents to buy health insurance from across the country. Maybe there's a better plan that costs less in Tennessee that I want to buy for my family. Why shouldn't I be able to purchase that?
Do you think that would help drive costs down or up?
I think it would help drive costs down. You'd have more people, mm-hmm. you'd have more choices, and, you know, families are self-interested. They're going to look for the best deal for their family. So you've got more competition now between states instead of just a few ingrained players in a certain mm-hmm. state. You can have more options across the country. Another option would be to change the tax treatment of health care benefits. Right now, my employer, I'm lucky, they offer me benefits, and I don't have to pay taxes on those benefits, but if I were a small business owner, I would have to buy my health care plans with after-tax dollars. That's a real disparity that should be changed. You shouldn't be penalized in having to pay higher taxes just because your employer doesn't offer health care benefits. That's another solution. HSAs, the health savings account that I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, it's mm-hmm. a great way to do this. It helps with price transparency because when those dollars are in your names and you can bequeath them to your heirs when you pass on, you've got an incentive to spend those in an intelligent way. I'll give you an example. I wanted a family member to get a skin cancer screening. So I called up three dermatologists and I asked them, what services do you provide and at what cost? And they were flabbergasted that they had a patient calling in to see what something might cost.
It's
in the end, I went with the lowest priced dermatologist, and I was convinced that I was going to get good quality care because of some of their ratings and recommendations by other patients. That's the kind of thing that we need to inject into the system, not pushing it off on a government bureaucrat who doesn't know what's best for you and your family.
A little bit more transparency and knowledge of costs would be helpful, I think, for all of us. I mean, even I mean, I have a health care. I'm insured, but if I go to the doctor, do I know what it costs? If they order tests, do I know what it costs? No, I really don't. And I'm not sure if that's good for the system. We have a quick Tom is on the line from the Southwest side. Tom, do you want to make a comment?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. You have a great show. And I can raise this point on Catholic radio that I can't raise on secular radio. Isn't it our obligation as a good Catholic, and you can use good as you want, to assure that there's access for health care for everyone, no matter what their income is, even if they don't have one? It seems to me that we always have money for federal programs for the war machine and everything else, but when it comes to health care for those who may, in some cases, need it the most, people are always hemming and hawing about the cost of it, but they don't care about when billions mm-hmm. of dollars that are spent for war. I don't understand that.
Yeah. Patrick, do you want to make a comment to that? I will, but why don't you, if you want to go first.
Yeah, Tom, first of all, thank you for calling. I appreciate the question because that is a concern from a Catholic healthcare perspective. As I said at the beginning of the show, we do believe that healthcare is a right. And, you know, I get a little concerned when we start comparing healthcare to buying car insurance. I mean, if you have a child who has Down syndrome and you cannot go out and buy your employer won't cover it. If you have the savings account that Christina's talking about, you cannot get an insurer that's going to cover your child because it's a pre-existing condition. The insurer knows it's going to cost them a lot of money over the lifetime of that child. Even if they do offer you a plan, it's going to be prohibitive in cost. So we do need protection for the people at the outside of our society, or a couple that works their whole lives. Maybe they get laid off. If you get laid off, you lose your insurance. Suddenly, you're uninsured. You can go with COBRA, but that's expensive. Or if you then have a pre-existing condition, if one of them has a heart condition, they'll cover you, but they won't cover for that. My other response to what Christina was saying was, yes, you can shop around for a pediatrician or something, but when you have a heart attack or, you're under duress and you need care now, you're going to go to the closest hospital. You're not going to be shopping around. It's not a commodity.
You can't shop around if you have no visible means of income also.
Right. Yeah. So I think, what's getting lost in this debate of a public plan, private plan is, how do we care for people at the fringes of our society, and we really need to get back and focus on that.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to make one last point, and then I'll let you get back. Friends who are pro-life, as I am, who are opposed to national health care, or maybe some kind of policy set up, but how can one be pro-life, be opposed to abortion, but then not be in favor of providing health care, even if it's at taxpayers' expense to the lower income people in society? And thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, Tom. Pat, did you want to say something, Patrick, or do you want me to see if
go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, no, I think he brings up the heart of the matter, I think, for many of us, which is how do we extend health care coverage to those people who don't have it, yet maintain our moral integrity not to provide certain coverages that we would find objectionable? And I think, you know, he brings it all together from what Patrick and Christina have been talking about this morning, which is how do we really define the problem and how do we come up with a solution to address the problem? Because I think reasonable people can disagree. This is a matter of prudential judgment by and large, which is how do we make sure that those people that don't have it, the people that you describe, Patrick, do have coverage so they can lead better, more fuller lives? Yet on the other hand, I think we have also a fiduciary responsibility that we don't create a system that bankrupts us all. And we do have some sense of cost containment, but nonetheless, that cost containment allows us to further ensure those who don't have it. It's not an easy thing to do, and that's probably why we're going down this path a second time, because in 92 we didn't quite make it, so we're going to try again this time. And perhaps the proposal that's been – or the descriptions of the proposals, it's a heavy lift at this point in time. So that's where I think we're getting into all these conversations. I'm being reminded we have to take a quick break. Don't go away, anybody. We'll be right back if you want to join our conversation. Once again, the number is area code 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
The Chicago Catholic Scripture School is now accepting applications for classes starting in September throughout the Archdiocese. This is our Bible study program for adults. Students come together weekly to pray and study the Word of God with teachers who are themselves strong Catholics with an extensive background in Scripture and theology. Year 1 classes will be held at St. Anne's in Barrington, St. Joseph in Libertyville, St. Julie Billiard in Tinley Park, St. Teresa of Avila in Lincoln Park, and St. Philip Neri in the South Shore neighborhood. There will be a year 1 class in Spanish at St. Cecilia in Mount Prospect and Precious Blood on Chicago's west side. And our first scripture school in Polish will be held at St. Hyacinth Basilica. For more information or to register for the Chicago Catholic Scripture School, visit www.catechesis-chicago.org or call 312-534-8053. That's 312-534-8053 and www.catechesis-chicago.org.
The Archdiocese of Chicago has launched a blog and wants you to join in the conversation. Here's Cardinal Francis George talking about modern communications.
Church was in radio when it first started and then television. Now with the blogs and the internet and all, the church has to be there too for the same reason St. Paul was in the town square in Athens and Corinth, the Areopagus, where people would come together and listen to everybody talk. Well, that Areopagus is now electronic.
Cardinal George will rotate with other archdiocesan leaders in posting their thoughts on faith-based topics and taking part in this electronic dialogue. Visit our blog at www.archchicago.org. Read what Catholic leaders have to say and become part of the discussion. That's www.archchicago.org. We hope to hear from you soon.
We'll see how this works. I'm curious myself. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about the healthcare reform debate going on in Washington. And actually, it's not only going on in Washington, it's going on everywhere. Congress is in recess, and they go back in a couple weeks. And it's been the topic of a lot of conversations on talk radio, cable television, the newspapers, the media, et cetera. I think the president is taking probably a time out, a break this week. He's on vacation. And I'm sure when we get back, he gets back, this will be the issue probably between now and the end of the year. The number here, if you want to join the conversation in the last 15 minutes or so, is 312-255-8408. You know, one of the things that I think we didn't really get to, and I'd just like to throw it out there, is what is the role of the individual as it comes in the healthcare reform debate? You know, we hear a lot about individual lifestyle preferences and our obligations to, you know, eat right, and, you know, obesity is a big problem in our culture, and to what degree that leads to increased health care costs, et cetera. And I think Christina was getting to this point with regard to her talking about healthcare savings account, HSAs, which really focuses on the individual and helps us to hold down healthcare costs. And I think when we delve into this government program, perhaps there is a sentiment there that the individual is not directing as much care as perhaps they could if holding down costs and extending it to more people would be the goal. What degree does individual responsibility have in a healthcare reform debate? Patrick?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I mean, obviously, we all have responsibilities to ourselves and to society, but and Christina's right in this regard. Our health care is always paid by a third party. Mm-hmm. As she said, we don't shop around. We don't look for costs to hold down costs. We want it when we want it, and we want everything now. I think that's an aspect of our health care system that needs to change. I think, as Christina said, we get our health care from our employer. It's tax-free. We're not paying that. Well, we pay a copay and a deductible, but we're not paying the full cost of that. And, you know, when we have a cough or something, we go to the doctor, and we're not concerned about, well, how much is this going to cost me? I don't shop around the way I shop around for a new pair of shoes or a television, so the patient is removed from the true cost of health care. And the other point I wanted to make, though, as far as this issue of cost, we are already paying the cost for a broken health care system. Mm-hmm. You know, every time someone goes to the ER because they don't have a doctor, they wait till they're very sick. They go to the ER. It's the most expensive place to get health care, and that's what our uninsured population is doing. So we're already paying a high cost for health care, and we could be providing it in a smarter way. And I think we could also restructure it so that people are more connected to how much it is costing them and having some responsibility to that cost.
Mm-hmm. Christina, do you want to...
You know, going back to the caller's question about how do we provide care, I don't think anyone would disagree that we all want Americans to have high-quality health care. It's just a matter of how do we get there.
Yep.
And I think Obama set up an interesting question for himself recently when he said, you know, the post office is the one having problems where FedEx and UPS are doing just fine. He was talking about competition in the mail and package delivery system. I don't think he meant it in the way that it came across, but who would you rather rely on to get your mail where it needs to go? The post office with its long lines and impenetrable customer service operation, or FedEx? I can certainly tell you that I'd prefer to go to FedEx. I know that when I walk in there, the lines are going to be shorter. I'm going to get better quality care. It's going to be reflective of the price of mailing a package, whereas in the post office, it's indirectly subsidized by taxpayers. So do we want a government-controlled system where you have little recourse, or do you want a customer-based system where the company has an incentive, a strong incentive, to keep you, the customer, happy? I would opt for the FedEx versus the post office.
That's an interesting comparison. And I did hear the president make that comment. You know, one of the other things, too, that I don't know if any of you caught this, but we have about 10 minutes or so to go. Over the weekend, this is indirectly related to cost containment, I suppose. Over the weekend, Jim Toohey was on Chris Wallace's program talking about a publication that the Veterans Administration put out, and it's regarding end-of-life care. And I know that's been a recent conversation recently about end-of-life care and indirectly related to cost containment. Did either of you see Mr. Toohey's comment in the Wall Street Journal of the program yesterday about – and there's been a lot of talk about these death panels, and I know there's a lot of misinformation out there about them. But did either of you catch that? Apparently not.
No, Bob.
And in essence, I think that's part of this debate too in terms of cost containment. I think that's another thing that's out there that's being driven a little bit by those people who are concerned about some of Christine's points about a government system, which is questions that prompt veterans to perhaps make decisions that they ordinarily want to make during the end of life care that could lead them to, you know, the old fear about pulling the plug and that sort of thing. But anyway, it's an interesting debate as we get down towards the end of life care, which has kind of been a subtext of this conversation. I think that's going to be probably talked about a lot more when Congress gets back in the next couple weeks or so. In the final 10 minutes or so, anybody got any predictions about where this is going? Patrick, the Joe Lieberman approach, is that going to take center stage here?
Yeah, I think, and I'd be interesting to hear Christina's thoughts on this as well. You know, it's funny, you know, a lot of the commentators in the news are saying, well, the Republicans are against this, Republicans are against this. But, you know, what's killing this plan is the Democrats. They control the House, they control the Senate, and they have a Democratic president. You'd think they could get this done. And I thought at the beginning that, you know, it was a slam dunk for them. But in fact, it's the Democrats that are sinking this plan. You have Nancy Pelosi with what they call the progressive Democrats in the House that initially wanted a single-payer, government-run program. They said, well, we'll compromise and do this two-part, you know, public side, private side. And then in the Senate, the Democrats have rejected that out of hand, and it's the Democrats that can't agree on this. So now you have Joe Lieberman, a former Democrat who's an independent, trying to come in and say, well, let's find the common ground here and let's at least move forward on that. I see this as a very heavy lift for the president and the Congress to get this thing out in any sort of comprehensive fashion. I think they're going to do something because I think they have to. I think it's going to be watered down. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I don't think it's going to be anything near the types of things that we're discussing this morning with mm-hmm. this public plan and co-ops and things like that. I don't think the American people are there yet.
Yeah. Christina?
I think that the politicians who ignore the public outcry over these changes do so at their own political peril. Hmm. I mean, our own Senator Durbin refuses to hold a public health care town hall.
Right.
And he called some of the protesters some not-so-nice names. Well, you know, just 2 weeks ago, we had about 150 people turn out at Durbin's Springfield office, standing outside his office asking for a meeting, didn't get one. Hmm. But instead of being the rowdy protesters he claimed they were outside his office singing God Bless America. And so there is, and I'm seeing more letters to the editors. People are concerned that they don't feel like they're getting to their politicians. They're not being allowed access to them to share their concerns. And, you know, we're talking about a very intimate thing, and that is health care. And people are concerned about how these changes will affect them, and they should be. And politicians need to be responsive to that and slow down and make sure they get it right rather than just doing something to score political points with your base.
And I think part of the problem, the challenge for them, too, is that the public opinion polling that I've read indicates an inordinately high percentage of Americans are comfortable with their health care coverage. I want to say it's in the 80s. And so the problem, what goes back to what I think Patrick's point was earlier, is can we more clearly define the problem and devise a solution for the problem? Because it seems what has been taken part so far is an attempt to make it a moral issue, attempt to make it an economic development issue, an attempt to make it – I think they've moved the target here a few times, and I'm not sure if anything in terms of coming out of Washington has necessarily stuck to the American people that has persuaded them to say, yes, we need to do this. I'm not sure if we're there yet, and I think you're right. I know the president was on the phone last week with a couple of religious leaders making the case that it's a moral issue. Well, I'm not sure if that's going to play very much further than his original argument, which is, if I recall right, was we needed to do this it was related to the TARP spending, wasn't it?
Right.
It was an economic
right.
development issue.
Right.
So I'm not sure where we're going with this thing myself. But I do think that one of the things that was brought up, I think, Barry Christina, is I think that for those elected officials that don't listen to the public, with an election year coming up very quickly, it'll be interesting to see how this plays into the upcoming election cycle. And by the way, it was Paul Ryan who had suggested that if this does pass, that Congress should be mandated to participate in whatever passes. And so I don't think that got a big reaction from some of the leaders that be.
No, I believe that failed on a committee vote.
You know, I think you're right. It did last week. That's right. That's right. So that didn't even work as well. Okay. Anything else? Any other closing comments, Patrick, from your side in terms of the healthcare debate?
Well, again, I think we have to recognize that there are problems with the system, that it isn't working for all Americans, and it needs to be adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope we can keep the politics out of it enough that we can revisit the issue, tone it down, identify what the real problems are, and try to fix them. And I'll end where I began. From a Catholic health perspective, we're looking at it based on our principles. We think people should have access to health care. It's not a commodity. It's a right, and we should protect life from conception through natural death.
And Christina, any comments from Illinois Policy Institute?
Absolutely, and I'm going to go back to that nagging fiscal question. All
yeah.
of these things must be paid for. I work for a nonprofit organization, and we're concerned about charitable contributions. Obama and the Democrats have talked about either adding a surtax onto wealthy individuals or getting rid of some of the tax deductibility of charitable contributions. And for any nonprofit charitable
yeah.
group out there, that's a real concern to our bottom line. Can we keep doing what we're doing if Obama leaves less money in the hands of people who do donate to groups like ours?
I forgot about that. That's right, about how to pay for it, which was the increasing the taxes on the people making more than X number of dollars. Yeah. Christina, for people want more information about the Illinois Policy Institute or where to get information about this topic, where do they go?
They can head to IllinoisPolicyInstitute.org. We've got a bunch of information on how this would impact them as state taxpayers, federal taxpayers, and what these programs actually mean for their family and their health insurance plan.
Good, and I know IPI does a lot of other work and other issues as well relating to fiscal and economic issues as well. And Patrick, the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, for further information, they would go to where for on the healthcare debate?
Right. Our website is il-cha.org. And you can we have links to other sites as well, but that's the best place to go.
And I know that the Bishops' Conference as well has been very engaged in this and has sent many letters to members of the congressional delegation, mostly focusing on Christina's point earlier and Patrick's as well, is about if there's a public option to make sure that abortion-related services are not covered. And I know that's a big issue with the Catholic Church and the Catholic community. And the Bishops' Conference has a whole web page devoted to this, and that's at www.usccb.org. Okay, thanks, guys. A good program, a lot of information. Christina Rasmussen from the Illinois Policy Institute, thanks so much for joining us. And Patrick Cascione from the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association. Very good viewpoints, different emphasis, but basically the same sort of theme is that we need to extend health care, but we need to make sure about who's paying for it. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and join us next month for a different topic on a different public policy issue. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good day.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day and God bless you.